you going, yeah? How you going, yeah? How you going, yeah?
G'day, Ross from the Cosmic Psychos here. Welcome to How You Going, the show where I sit down for a drink and catch up with one of my mates. You'll know me, mate, in this episode as the vocalist and guitarist for the mighty psych rock powerhouse Wolfmother. Wolfmother have been around since 2004, and after putting out their self-titled debut album, they became instantly super famous. Their music is in TV shows, movies, your Friday night playlist, and you've probably got one of their tunes knocking about in your head right now. They've released 5 more albums over the years and continue to tour the world, playing with the likes of Van Halen, Blondie, Pearl Jam, Stone Temple Pilots, just to name a few. I first met Andrew a few years ago when the Psychos and Wolfmother played at the Pandemonium Festival. We had a shared habit of not taking ourselves too seriously, and we got along great. Andrew calls Byron Bay home these days, so just like last week with Scarlett, we had a little catch-up chat over the interweb thing. I cracked a heaps normal and a bod riggy Cosmic Psychos draft, and Andrew had a couple of cans of whatever passes for beer in New South Wales. And while you're a captive audience, Cosmic Psychos have a new album out on November the 7th called I Really Like Beer. And we're taking up the road up and down the East Coast, over the West and heaps of places in between. Visit cosmicpsychos.com.au for details and tickets. Anyway. All right, Andrew Stockdale, how you going, mate?
Good. What's happening, Ross? Good to see you.
Oh, well, I'm doing this pod thing. It's been fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. This is where it's at.
Oh, yeah, I'm right with all this wires and stuff. It's good. So, mate, I haven't seen you since the Pandemonium Festival.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoyed doing that festival so much, despite how much crap I kept reading about it.
Yeah.
But I had an absolute ball, and I was very lucky. And I think everyone was very lucky that went there to see the bands and see a really good festival that just seemed to keep getting shot down at the knees. What did you think about it? I thought it was good.
We were kind of pinching ourselves whilst we were there. I was like, is this happening? Is this real? It was like, is it some kind of like mind control like that was going on for like months of like, this isn't happening. It's on, it's off, it's on, it's off.
And it happened. It was bloody great. The attendance was could have been a bit better, but I mean, the people that went would be, I reckon they'd be like me and you, just talking about it for a while. It was a great festival.
It's funny, like I was told that it was cancelled, and I got this offer to play in Mexico, like in 2 days, and I thought, stop it, I'm going to Mexico. I don't know if I told you this,
yeah,
but so I went over there. Went to this festival in Monterrey in Mexico. It like took me like 3 flights in Mexico to get to this like festival. We get there. The headline, Kendrick Lamar, didn't turn up. The people that we replaced, well, they canceled Sum 41. So I played this festival to make up for Pandemonium. And then once I got to America, they go, Pandemonium's going ahead. You got to come back and do that as well. And I was like, all right, I wouldn't have gone to Mexico if I knew Pandemonium was going ahead.
Yeah. Bloody hell. So where was the last one?
Oh, yeah, Brisbane. That was the last one, yeah.
You actually, we were supposed to go out and have a drink in Brisbane, but we flew back early or something like that.
Yeah, you took off, yeah. And you missed out on, I almost met Alice Cooper as he was walking to the stage, and I was like, have a good show, Alex. And everyone around me is like, dude, you just called Alice Cooper Alex.
Oh,
I was like, damn, shit.
Yeah, the more you don't want to say anything stupid, the stupider it bloody comes out.
Yeah.
For me, anyway.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah, well, I mean, we played with Gene Simmons in Italy.
Oh.
After we did the Pandemonium thing, we did Europe for about 2 months or so.
Right.
And, he's definitely a funny character. Like, we were down we were having dinner in this restaurant in the hotel, and he just walked in this, like, you know, velvet kind of outfit, and there's a baby crying. This couple were like feeding their baby. He went over and like held this like handful of cash in front of the baby as a joke to make it stop crying. People were just looking at him like, who is this guy? But he was entertaining, but yeah, he's out there.
Unbelievable. How's things on the home front, mate? What have you fixed and what have you broken?
Well, our back fence is falling over from Cyclone Alfred.
Oh, jeez, that's right. You get put through that.
We're sorting that out.
What you copped, you can tell me about it. I was watching it. So it sort of landed sort of basically pretty close to you, didn't it?
Well, I was on this Red Hot Summers tour. We played somewhere near Newcastle or something, got to Sydney. Our flight back to Brisbane was the last flight allowed to fly into Brisbane before they shut down the airport.
Oh, wow.
And the way they were talking about it was like, oh, the house solar panels could come off and the roof could come off. So the main road into Byron was fully flooded. All the petrol stations were shut down. I got a generator out of storage.
Wow.
Brought it back home and there was no servos open to fill it up. I just said to the missus, I was like, let's get out of here, man, because like that you couldn't get any food in town.
Yeah.
And the road into town was flooded. So we just went down to Coffs, sitting at a restaurant that night having a 3-course meal.
What's the way to do it?
Yeah, I just thought, because I stuck it out in 2022, and I thought, I've had enough of this.
Well, was it 22 when the pub flooded? Was that before that?
Maybe it was flooded. Yeah, maybe the Northern was flooded.
Yeah, well, someone told me there was like a meter of water went through the Northern. So, hopefully it took off the sound restrictors.
Probably the best clean it's had in a little while.
So how long have you been in Byron now? It's like Byron, is that to you like what the farm is to me? Like you feel totally home there?
Yeah, I've been here for like 12 years. I'm grateful to be here for sure. I mean, it has its drawbacks. You know, for gigs, I've got to drive a lot to get to the airport or whatever.
Yeah.
But of course, I mean, it's a pretty good atmosphere. You know, I dropped my kids off at school today and didn't have time to put their shoes on, and when I picked them up, they still didn't have their shoes on.
Perfect.
No one cared.
Yeah, unreal, unreal. Nah, it's a good spot.
You get used to that kind of laid-back lifestyle. It's hard to, you know, try to, like, to live in a city where you've got to, like, kind of do all that
stuff. Yeah, I couldn't do it myself, mate. I just playing a few gigs in a few cities is enough for me. It's always good to leave.
Yeah. Good to get there, good to leave.
Yeah, bloody oath. Bloody oath. Did you know that I really like beer? Well, I'm here to tell you about a bloody ripper of a Victorian beer called Bodriggy Brewing. And I bloody love them because they brew beers that taste like beer. It's beer so good, we're making a Cosmic Psychos draft with them. Available on tap at all good pubs. If your local doesn't have it, ask them why. Good on you, Bodriggy. I have to ask you some half-serious questions. When Wolf Mother exploded, like one minute you weren't there, the next minute you're there, but not in a little way, it just seemed like it happened so quick. Is that just me not being up with it, or was it that quick?
For sure. Yeah. No, it was, it took off in a big way very quickly. Like, I remember when we signed our record deal, like the guy at the label was like, which territory do you want to break first? And I just said, all of them. And then he's like, do you want to go to New York this weekend? And I'm like living in a little studio apartment. And I'm like, yeah, cool. And then that weekend, we're in New York in Soho. Playing, I don't know if you remember this fashion brand, Subi.
Yeah.
Subi jeans, they were really big and they had this shop in Soho and we played in front of this white sheet with all these naked models behind the sheet, silhouettes of all these naked women. And we played like, I think that day we went around in a taxi in New York. We played three times that day. And he was on the phone. Do you want to do another gig? Do you want to, you know, Brooklyn? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? Then we're like on Letterman.
Yeah.
We're on, you know, Conan O'Brien. And we're like touring the States. We did like the States in 8 days. Like we'd go and see all these radio stations, have a beer with the radio station at a pub, play pool with them, play a gig that night, get to the hotel at like 3 o'clock in the morning, get up at 7, fly to another city, do that 8 times. And we got this boss. I think we did like 200 and something shows in 2005 or 2006. So yeah, we were just going flogging wolf mother.
Bloody hell.
To the nth degree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how did you handle it? Going from basically getting a phone call and going, right, you're going there now. How did you go with that? Like I can't fathom it.
Oh, well, it was like, you know, I remember getting like a Doors Wonderland Avenue book and reading like, you know, the Doors biography and Led Zeppelin's biography and watching Iggy Pop documentaries. And I sort of thought it was like a privilege to have this opportunity. So like at that age, I embraced it. You know, I thought that's the dream. I mean, now, 20 years later, like I'm like, damn, that's a lot of shows, or that's a lot of traveling, or, you know, I think about it too much. But at the start, I wouldn't think twice about going to LA, New York, everywhere in between, back to Japan, back again on economy, 200 shows a year. Because like you go from like paying to get into the pub to see a band to being on the stage, getting free beers, and they're paying you to be on the stage, and then you're getting a record deal. And, you know, like I said, you know, I see these bands now and they go, oh, we made no money. We, you know, we did this tour. We did 5 shows or 10 shows in Australia and we only made $9,000. I'm like, man, I went on tour for a year or two and lost $170,000. And so when we got our first sync on a computer game, it went straight to the record label to pay back all, you know, all the shows we did where we lost money. And I remember first time we made money, they were like, okay, you guys made $100,000 each. You can get paid. But this is like what you've spent. And I'd spent $80,000 on room service.
Oh no.
So I got $20,000.
That's the bit that people don't understand. Like people that don't, like I'm on a much smaller scale and have been for 40 years, but yeah, there's no money on any scale really at the end of the day. It's just whether it be, you know, we've gone out for 3 months in Europe playing nearly every night, and then you're lucky to get your airfares back by the time everyone else gets paid, kind of thing. It's the people seem to think that you just get a pocket full of cash after every night, which is I wish it was true.
Some of these promoter deals are terrible. I mean, we played in Biarritz on our last tour, you know, 1,500 people, sold out show. And there's like 50 crew people sitting around, bottles of wine and catering. And I'm like, I'm looking at the settlement and I'm like, damn, I'm paying for this. Like, that's like $3,000 taken off the thing. And then they take the PA off and they take this off and then da, da, da. We caught the train there. I'm not going to say how much we got at the end of the day, but I mean, yeah, you're right. It's like it barely would cover your hotel for 3 people or 4 people, and it's a sold out show. So back in the day when we had 11 crew and a manager taking a cut off the gross, and a booking agent taking a cut and withholding tax and blah, you're not making money.
But how did you hold up though? Like when it was just doing all that and that happening, like how was your, like physically in your headspace, or it just didn't matter? You were just enjoying the magic carpet ride, as to speak, I guess.
I think I remember catching a lot of colds. Like I remember at the start, like they say a lot of people, when they travel the world, you get sick a lot for the first 6 months and then your immune system builds up. And I remember being sick a lot. But mentally, I guess, yeah, it was a strain. Yeah, of course. It was like, yeah, I mean, I just had a daughter then. She's now 19. She's going to uni. She was just born like when Wolf Mother took off. So, oh. I went on tour. I did a gig the day she was born, flew up to Brisbane. Yeah, she was born.
Yeah.
Then went back on tour the next day on the big day out and then went on tour. And then we took her on tour. But I actually spent a lot of money bringing, you know, Jude and Junie along on tour. So they came along for a lot of it. So I think maybe that's kept me sane, maybe. But
yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah. I took both my sons on a national. I couldn't take them overseas because of the condition of one of my boys, but I used to take them around Australia. And
yeah. And
it's kind of, you know, you'd have someone looking after them at gig time and stuff, but I actually didn't mind that it was hanging out with these two very young kids and then jumping in an Uber or a cab and going to the show and then rushing back to sort of, you know, get up and do breakfast for it. It's a good leveler for me. I found it a good leveler. Because you just can't, couldn't let me guard down. I just couldn't. I just didn't want to come home at 3 o'clock in the morning and have someone jumping on my head at 6 o'clock in the morning wanting to play. It just didn't sort of, I just couldn't see it working. But yeah, I mean, expenses are times three or four then. So it's, but anyway, no, it's an interesting thing with you. Kids on tour. We toured America with Robbie Rocket and he took two young kids right around America with us. And that was in one little van, one small van. So that was interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, back when we started, we took this tour bus. So we were sleeping on bunks, so we barely saw America. But now I just get a van and stay in hotels, you know, outside of the city. You actually see where you're going and you see the place that you're touring. So, yeah, I prefer driving it around in a van these days.
I remember we used to get the last bus we got was in America and the tour grossed 17,000 and the bus cost us 42. So that was a very smart business decision. but we had fun.
Yeah, actually, that sounds pretty decent. For what was it, 40 grand for a bus? That's now they're getting up. A lot of these bands can't be breaking even.
Now, we jumped on the Chats bus for a little while in the States a couple of years ago, and I can't remember how much a day that was costing, but it was a lot more than what we paid in 2014 or whatever it was, 2010. It's like doubled again or something. It's like an incredible price. But anyway, it is what it is. I suppose we can't argue with it, can we?
Yeah.
getting back on to when things went bang for Wolf Mother and you're going everywhere in that. The Great Australian Tall Poppy Syndrome, did you cop a lot of shit for actually, A, being good and, B, being successful?
Oh, that's nice of you to say. Thanks, man. And I remember, like, you know, coming from a obscurity, I was like, wow, we're being Tall Poppy, we've made it, like, this is amazing. I can't believe we're actually big enough to be like cut down. But yeah, I mean, you got to be careful, I think, with that stuff though, because if you pander too much towards not making it or not taking advantage of your success or being criticized for whatever reason, you make yourself smaller and you try to appease that kind of criticism, you're never going to win. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a lose-lose situation. And I think maybe that's just like the tradition of rock and roll. It's a love-hate relationship. And of course, as you said, being Australian, it's maybe that kind of is culturally, they think that you're not humble or they think you're not down to earth or you're deluded or you got a big ego or whatever, you know. People start your character becomes open for discussion. You just got to ignore that, and it's going to happen if you put yourself out. If you put yourself on a stage, you do something, people are going to love it, people are going to hate it, and it's something you've just got to learn to live with. There's like a level of discomfort that you have to accept. And if you just charge forward, there's like, you know, there's good things around the corner. You know, I think there's more success around the corner, you know, and the gatekeepers, the press, or, you know, the keyboard warriors don't have as much power as possibly they think they have. And you can't let that throw you off, you know what I mean?
Mm. It's hard. As you mentioned, the keyboard warriors, we didn't have any keyboard warriors back in our day. We just had people throwing cans of beer at us, so we were kind of lucky.
And I mean, sometimes, you know, I remember playing with this band in London, and someone threw a beer at them, and I said, well, at least they're watching, you know, or take it as a compliment. They're like, you know, like, I think you've just got to have very low standards, or I mean, to have an audience or attention of any type as an artist who's created something, the biggest insult is just being completely ignored. You know, upload a song to SoundCloud and you look at the views and it's like 14 views. I mean, you've got to develop thick skin. I think was when you dedicate your life to, I know you've got your trade to back you up, but once you enter into the arts, I mean, you more or less have just accepted a life of poverty. At least that's what I thought at the start. You know, I just thought all these things that people have, like a nice new bed, consistent relationships, or you know, a house, like, I'm never going to have that. I'm never going to have a new car. I'm going to have a life of like poverty, you know, because I was a photographer before I started music. So I was on the poverty line, you know, I made under 10 grand or 5 grand a year from when I was 17 to Wolf Mother starting 27. So to get tour poppied or anything, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, well, you seem to have handled it, or got your head around it quick anyway.
Of course. I don't know how you deal with it. You just get anxious and you get nervous and you just keep going.
Yeah. Oh, bloody hell. But there was a festival you played in, was it Jakarta, that you pulled out? It was sponsored by a tobacco company.
No, we did that gig.
You did the gig? Oh, I thought someone told me that you'd pulled out.
Yeah, there's a big, some guy did an article, some academic did an article saying that we were doing a festival that was sponsored by a cigarette company. It's a bit of a controversial topic at the time. And I remember seeing this comment with this kid who wrote, "I just sold my mobile phone to buy a ticket to go and see Wolf Mother in Jakarta."
Oh.
I was like, we got to go just to play to that guy, man.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And we did the gig.
Unreal.
Haven't been back since, but my brother's married to an Indonesian girl, so good excuse to go over and see how people live over there and what they do. But
bloody oath. It's a good spot. I'm hoping to do a bit more travelling over there because I just can't be bothered getting on a plane for too much longer nowadays. So I want to go and just spend my dying days in Asia. Be lovely.
Yeah, the trip to Perth, I was like, man, my feet are swelling. My knee the last hour or two. It's just after 6 hours or something. It's not getting any shorter, is it?
No, mate, it's certainly not. The only luxury I give myself now is always get the extra leg room now. I just have to have no one in front of me. I just can't, I just don't feel as claustrophobic. And at least I can stand up, but I'm not climbing over someone. That's about it for me.
I'm a bit claustrophobic myself. And on the flight back from Perth, I was on the row without a window.
No.
And I was in between these two big dudes And I'm in the middle. I'm in the worst seat in the plane coming back. Neither of them put their elbow on the on the armrest. So I wasn't getting – I was like, everyone kind of knew I had the worst seat. So they just sort of gave me a bit of space. But I was like, just watched Dumb and Dumber for the 1,000th time and had a few bottles of white wine and it was gone like that.
And that's there's only one thing worse in that seat when both blokes either side go to sleep with their hands behind their head and you've got their armpits in your nose. I had that coming back from London one time.
Oh, I sat next to this guy once who was so fat that he couldn't get the tray down in front of him. So he had to there was a seat between us that was free. He'd put the tray down on the middle seat in between because he couldn't get the tray down on top of his gut. So he had to put his food on the tray in the middle and lean over and stuff his face. Sometimes you just, you see the weirdest looking person at the airport and you go, I'm probably sitting next to that person, eh? I can just tell.
It's amazing. It's almost like you send out a radar. I've had the same thing where you go, oh, not that one. Hopefully it's not that one. And it is. It's always that one. Or you see them coming in through the plane and walking all the way up and you go, just turn left, turn right, turn left, turn right. And then it's straight beside you. It's fantastic. It's wonderful power that we both have.
Just need to accept it and just go,
I say to myself when I'm on the long haul flights now, I sit there and I just go, well, I could be on a bus. I could be on a bulldozer for 12 hours, 14 hours, but I'm sitting here. I can order a drink and they're going to feed me. So that's not too bad.
Yeah.
So it's all in the mind.
You don't have to drive.
Yeah. It's a bit hard to convince yourself after 14 hours it's all beer and Skittles, isn't it?
But alcohol does serve a purpose in these situations, I found.
Yep, and especially if you're lucky enough to have a seat beside you and you say to the person sitting there, are you going to drink on this flight? And they say no, and I say, well, do you mind if I order you a drink every time they come around? So that way you can get two or three at a time.
Well, James, the bass player, is like, can I have two bottles of red? And they gave it to him, and I thought, I'm going to try that next flight. And I go, can I have two beers? And they're like, finish that one first and then we'll come back. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm that guy.
Yeah, I try and be very polite and just hold it together as long as I can. I've never mucked up on a plane. I never want to. I just want to stay on the right side of the people in charge of the grog. I think it's a very good tip.
Oh, it's like the wrong place to prove anything. You're just like, your job is to sit down and fucking stay there.
Yeah, basically.
That's it.
I've always been a consistently happy drunk for most of my life. I'll say a functioning alcoholic. Like I still get up early for work, but I love having a drink. I love drinking for me makes me very, very happy. The day it makes me sad, I'll probably give it up. But have you had a wrestle with it over the years or not? Or just you a bit the same?
Yeah, I'm definitely on the happier side. Definitely, it helps me get in a good mood and sort of go to that place that you need to go to when you're traveling and you're leaving your family and you go to the other side of the world and you're taking a chance and you just sort of you got to embrace this sort of a unknown headspace and yeah. Don't get me wrong. Of course, sometimes parts of the night after gigs, you think. How did I get to my hotel? I can't remember going from here to there. Or falling asleep fucking on the bloody grass at a festival and waking up. But that's only started happening in the last year. I think as I've gotten older, I find the thing that's happening for me now is just falling asleep.
Mm.
So it's not quite as glamorous as I'd like to make out that something amazing was happening, but it's actually just falling asleep.
Well, I don't know about you, but I've taken on the task of making sure I try and get a grandpa nap in the afternoon. So I'll wake up first thing in the morning. And as you said, if you're overseas and you just want to get in the Autobahn groove or whatever. I'll have a couple of beers at a servo and just go, now I feel really nice. And then,
yeah.
But getting that little couple of hours kip, yeah. just that little sled, the little grandpa nap for me does me wonders now. It stops that falling asleep after the show as much. Not all the time.
Yeah. Well, then we loaned Macca our couch at Pandemonium.
That's right. He did a good job just fitting on that thing too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, little two-seater. He's a veteran. Very smart move.
Well, we
he's pacing himself.
We've surprised a few people that we play with. Like we'll quite often they'll come into the band room, like when it's a shared arrangement, and we'll all be having a little kip. The whole lot of us that we'll all be having a lie down and a little rest, and then they're just having a breath before the real event starts. And I get it. It's doing me good anyway.
Yeah, I remember at the end of one tour, like Noel Gallagher was like, come over to my gig and we're having a big after party at this after the gig. So went over to London and was having a few beers with the UMI guys and brought them Davey over to the Noel Gallagher thing. Was so excited and we're at the after party in the VIP bar and all this stuff and I'm just like, sitting at the bar and I freaking just fell asleep at the bar. I was just sitting there asleep. And then and then I wake up and Noel's like sitting just like a few tables over. He's like, hey, come over, have a drink. I'm sitting there talking with him. He's like, do you want to come over and we're going to party on, you know, keep having a few more drinks at his place with his crew and all this stuff. And I was like, man, I've had too much. I got to get the hell out of here. You know, I got to get back to the hotel. But I was like, got too excited, drank too much, and sent myself home and missed out on hanging out with Noel Gallagher.
I think we've all had their moments here. I don't do the spirits anymore. I just stick to the beer, and that way I can stay awake a little bit longer.
That's a wise move. That's a wise move. Yeah, I don't know how these guys drink the spirits, but some people have just got the tolerance, but,
yeah. You've got to be young. Young or just totally pickled, I reckon, one or the other.
Yeah. So you've got to have that drinking fitness. You just got to realize who you're drinking with. It's like you go, oh, so you can actually, like, drink that whole bottle and talk. It's like, I can't match you. Yeah. Like, you're for real.
As Clint Eastwood said, mate, man's got to know his limitations. So it's just... Yeah, those kind of people I'll drink beside them but not with them, if you know what I mean.
I get the feeling you could probably hold your own with the best of the best.
In my day, but those days are long gone. I wouldn't get anywhere near the podium now, mate, that's for sure.
Hey, it's probably for the best, isn't it?
I want to stay alive to do it for a few more years somehow, but... just keep plugging away. It's got too much fun not to. I don't know. Have you? I mean, it's your life now. Are you going to go on just keep going? Or is there any point you might go, I've had enough? Or that hasn't come yet, obviously.
Sometimes you feel a bit sorry for yourself and you feel like I've had enough. And then the next day you're like, oh, the next gig. You can't get too far ahead of yourself and you can't kind of throw it out either because I guess it's just part of your life. I mean, once you get to this point, you've been gone, what were you saying, 40 years or something?
Yeah, like, I mean, 40.
So, I mean, someone's going to want to see you play for the rest of your life. So it's there and it's going to be available to you at some point. So, I mean, when I see you guys play, I get the impression you enjoy it.
Oh, have a ball. I love it. Absolutely love it.
I mean, you don't look like a tortured artist.
No, definitely not a tortured artist, although me back is a little bit tortured, but apart from that, the head's still 14-year-old, so I'm quite lucky there. I didn't mature after 14, so I'm kind of lucky there.
Well, see, I think you could do what you want to do as long as you want to do because it's your thing and you know, it's part of who you are. You've written songs that are who you are, you know, like it's not like you don't go to a gig and go, oh man, I got to be that guy.
Nah, it's just a nursery rhymes about beer. That's all I've written. So
I think that's a big part of it. I think with what you're talking about do you want to keep doing this or not, it's like, it doesn't seem wrong for me to play Woman or Joker or this, any of those songs at any point. It's like, I like playing those songs. Yeah. It's cool. Like, yeah. And if I had another 10 as good as that, I'd be happy with that too, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the gigs aren't not enjoyable, you know? It's like, I get excited about gigs. We did a Stone Temple Pilots gig, and I was actually, I'm excited about playing with these guys. Like, but I think if you're playing with bands that you like, that definitely helps. Like, I mean, seeing you guys play at Pandemonium, that was awesome. Like, I mean, the vibe that you got on the stage every day, it was just good times band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The crowd was on your level, and you guys came solo with Macca with the gut thing. And yeah, you know, you managed to get all that tension out of the air. It's probably the art of looking like you don't give a shit, but you actually do, and you take it seriously, but you kind of make it look like you don't.
Because we sort of don't. If you're a bit like me and you want to say no to water, then be like me and always keep a slab of Heaps Normal in the fridge. It'll get you through those good times that are too good to be wasted. And when I'm on the dozer, Heaps Normal non-alcoholic beers give me the same heavenly taste of beer when I just can't afford the hassle. I call them stunt beers because you get all the action without anyone doing a mischief to themselves. Heaps Normal, too good to be wasted. Have you ever had to cancel a tour or not do a tour or either illness or just didn't want to do it or something? Or
I cancelled one European tour. When was it? After COVID, it was like delayed for like 3 years. Mm. And we did half of it and then we were coming back and then the other half. And I was just like, I'm over it, man.
Yeah.
But that was the last time that I cancelled a tour, which you feel terrible about it for a little bit, but it seems to be more common these days though. Like, I mean, back in the day, if you cancelled a tour, it was like, that's it, you know, career's over. Mm. Like, people very unforgiving and they think it's like disrespectful of the artist to not turn up and honor your fans, and you've got the best job in the world, how could you possibly turn this down? But it seems like these days people just cancel stuff left, right, and center. You got like cyclones and COVID and post-COVID, and people are like, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, man. But.
And it could be things like, you know, a little bit of mental illness creeping in where people try and push through and then end up doing themselves in or completely collapsing or something like that. So maybe that's got a bit more recognition now. People just get tired and go, maybe it's better not to do that tour or something, and more accepted nowadays, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, the last year I did 45 shows over 2 months in Europe, and for mental health, it's like you sort of do just become a bit disconnected. You definitely go to another place. You're just like a worker who just goes from one town to the next playing a show every day of the week and just driving all day and flying and staying in a hotel. You become a loner. You can't relate to the community on that level because you're not there. All this stuff that happened, you're going to miss it. You know, I just say to people in the band, I go, the weddings and this and the birthdays and that's going to happen on the road. You're going to miss all that stuff. You're going to have an amazing time on the stage and you're going to get paid to be a musician. You're going to be traveling the world, but you're going to have to adjust to it's like when people go to the airport and they're like, bring their mom and their girlfriend and their friend to say goodbye to them. Yeah, and I'm standing there going, dude, I stopped doing that 20 years ago.
I get the airport bus by myself. I get dropped off in the middle of the local town, and like Karen will just drop me off and she goes, see you in a couple of months, bye. And that's it. It's just like no fanfare.
And you start to think that's normal.
Mm.
And I guess to me it's normal, but to some people they might think, oh, you're a bit cut off and harsh and like, what's wrong with you? You know, like, oh, am I going to buy some shit to give to you? And I'm not buying you nothing because that means I have to carry it around for a month. I'm like, if someone gives me something on the road, I'm going to leave it in the hotel. All your sentimental stuff, it's like, yeah, I love it, but like, I can't go there. I can't do all this stuff. Man, Mike, that's not in the job description, but yeah, it's just your kids, man. You miss your kids.
Oh, shit, yeah.
That's the hardest thing, yeah.
That's
missing your kids, but now my daughter's moved out of home, and I'm like, usually I'm the guy who's leaving. Now she's left. I'm like, what?
Yeah, it's just the same thing. My youngest son's just gone joined the army, and just seeing him off, I was sort of heartbroken. I'm going, it's all right for me to nick off whenever I wanted, but, but where are you when I come home from work? You know, it's sort of like, you know, it's a hard adjustment. But what do you when you're home, which is usually not too long? But what do? You don't play golf or croquet or surf or what do you do just to go, I'm home now, or do you just do what my favorite thing is and do nothing?
I used to surf, but I kind of don't surf that often because my ear just gets blocked with and I get an ear infection. Yeah. But in terms of hobbies, like, I don't know what's happened to the time. I drop the kids at school, I get a coffee, and then I like freaking book some flights and hotels for the next show. And then, I mean, there's always something, there's all just like odd jobs. But I mean, I learned this guitar solo today, that I learned the solo to Rock and Roll. And even that was like, it's like, fuck, man, I don't know what I do. I don't know what I do. It's just like regional Australia. It just soaks up your time because you got to drive everywhere and everything takes so much time. But I'm working on a record, and I sort of stopped and left that for 3 or 4 months. And I occasionally listen to that and I think, man, that's way too slow. I actually looked up who produced your last record because I liked the production on it, and I saw that you recorded it in your shed.
Yeah. So it was just in a tin shed. But
that's awesome, yeah.
I left all my weights there because I didn't clean the shed up, so there was 2 motorbikes in there, and I left all my barbells and all the weights in there, all my lifting platform in there, and we had to work. I just wanted to make it the heaviest record ever recorded. So that's why I left all the weights on the floor. That's just a stupid idea. But the power rack, the squat rack, was our vocal booth. So it started raining, so we had to put doonas and blankets over the power rack and climb inside with a torch to record the vocals. So you couldn't hear the rain on the roof. But the rain on the roof would have been a good effect anyway, I think. It would have been fine.
Yeah. The bass tone was awesome, you know. You probably got that all dialed in by now, so you don't have to think about that.
Yeah, well, I bought that bass pedal when I was in high school. I still use the same one, so it's just something I don't have to think about. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. The less you have to do, the better.
Exactly. That's why I'm a bass player.
Like, I can't stand setting gear off. It's just like, oh god, because you just lose the momentum. You know, you just want everything plugged in, everything the way you do it, and just record and just move on.
Yeah. Well, it's like at home, it's always good. If I've got in the shed, I've always got a bass amp ready to go, because if I ever think, I think I've got a riff or I want to write a song, by the time I get my guitar out, by the time I get my fuzz pedal out, by the time I plug it in, by the time I all that stuff, and the moment's gone. It's just like it's buggered. So
yeah. I've been doing a lot of business stuff too, because I'm contemplating selling my catalog.
Oh yeah,
selling everything for a lump sum and just getting rid of it. But so I've been talking to all these different people, telling me how much it's worth and how much it's not worth. And
right, jeez, that's
and
yeah.
I've gotten to a point where I'm like, shit, maybe I just hang on to it. Screw it, I don't know.
Yeah.
But so that's been soaking up a lot of my time in the last, been educating myself on that whole thing.
Oh, geez, a bloody minefield there, I bet.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a new thing, isn't it? These all these big investors want to just buy bands' catalogs.
Yeah, buy, hold, and then try and pump them up, or and just sell, or buy, hold, then resell. It's all just a it's just stocks, isn't it? Really now they treating it that way. Bloody hell.
And I tried to. It's funny. One of my solo records, I've forgotten the username and password. For what I put it off on. And I emailed them and I said, I just need my royalty statement to send to someone who wants to buy. And they're like, your case has been shut down as a fraud case.
Oh,
so
no.
I can't even access my own royalty statement, my own freaking record. But they don't believe I'm who I say I am.
That's pretty ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
Bloody hell.
So, but no, it doesn't matter. It's probably $50 or something. And solar records don't sell.
No, I remember my best royalty check I ever got was $3.84 or something. That was a fantastic one. I got it many, many years ago. I got one good one, but apart from that, I get a couple of dollars here and a couple of dollars there. That's the other thing people think. People have a perception that because you play, you make money, but it's really you got to be played all around the world a lot to basically make anything out of it. Okay, I read my royalty statements. There's 40 cents from Spain for one song and 13 cents from Chile for another one. It's like, oh, it's interesting to read through.
Yeah, I've been unrecouped for 16 years.
Unreal.
So I never got a cent from the anything that I put out until 4 years ago. And then I was like, shit, so this is what people have been doing, living off this crap.
Yeah, unbelievable.
But, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, no, it's a funny old, with streaming and stuff, you don't get what you think you get. But I'm putting stuff out independently the last two or three records, and so I actually have seen a bit of income.
Yeah.
Which is nice, but no, it's hit and miss, isn't it? You know, like John Lennon said, feed the beast or it looks for food elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. All right, mate, good on you.
Hey, yeah.
Good to see you, mate. Good to chat.
Pleasure. Thanks, Ross. Great to chat.
Mate, and as I always say, mate, I'll see you soon.
Okay. Thanks, Ross.
So there you have it. Just a couple of mates catching up and telling it like it is. Thanks, Andrew, for making the time to chat with me. Don't be surprised if I turn up your doorstep one day with my Esky looking for a place to crash. Wolf Mother are playing shows all the time, so just keep an eye out for tour announcements and get along to some head-banging good fun. How You Going is produced by Sam Loy with Matt Weston as the executive producer. It's proudly supported by Heaps Normal and Bod Riggy Brewing, the best brewskis going around. How You Going is going to take a week off, but the show will be back soon with a chat I had with Danny from the June Rats. Here's a sneaky look.
People don't realise how much of a relationship being in a band is. My wife, Kaz, has probably said it too as well. It's like they share you with the band members, because when you're having a disagreement about something, or if someone's super quiet, you're kind of like, oh, I hope they're all right. Like, what's going on? Is it me? And you're in two marriages.
And remember, the Cosmic Psychos are touring in November as we try to flog our new album, I Really Like Beer. Check out thecosmicpsychos.com.au for all the drip trade details. All right, I've got to get out of here. See you soon.
How you going, yeah?